Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg.
And Fred and I have been talking about this really cool topic, which is how can we make reliability, this subject that's so important to every company and all of our careers, how can we make that work well in an environment that's fast and faster and faster? And we got done with what we'll call part one, and now we've got more to talk about on this subject. So, Fred, just to kick it off, we can bracket the subject because not only do we need to be fast, but you could be too fast. So there's an integrity part of this where all of the desire we have to fit into a fast to market, we also have to be willing to stand up and say, wait a minute, we can't compromise certain things. Mm-hmm. And so a good reliability engineer has to know. The quote that comes to mind is from Thomas Jefferson. In matters of style, swim with the current. In matters of principle, stand like a rock. Mm-hmm. So we have to know where you stand like a rock and say, yes, we're on board, we're a team player, but we have certain things that have to be done. And knowing what those are versus where can we swim with the current and pick tools that support fast, and knowing the difference between those two is part of this discussion.
Yeah. Now, you know, where do we need to stand fast? I think is in principle. It's not that we always do three samples at 100 degrees C for 6 weeks. It's if that serves a purpose, then it's great. If it doesn't serve a purpose, I'd say you can't stand fast on that just because we've always done it. My hesitation is, there is nothing in reliability engineering that we always do. Right, there's always exceptions in it. There's core sets of tools that we often go to because they repeatedly add value in such a wide variety of circumstances, and so we go to those tools very often. Yet, I think the guard against going too fast and skipping too many things and not addressing all of the risk is, I think, the place I absolutely advise people to take a stand is when you notice a failure mechanism or there's a significant amount of uncertainty, not just yourself, but the team, that says this is a safety issue, right?
Yeah.
If this could corrode and short to 10,000 volts to the chassis, that's not something we can allow to go on, right? We have to investigate it.
It
doesn't mean we do 6 months of testing. It means that we raise the awareness and we do due diligence to solve those things.
Yeah, because the rare event can be very high risk. And number one, a good reliability engineer needs to see those things and mm-hmm. know what they are. And then number two, they need to collaborate with management and to make sure that management is aware of where there is risk. And then you can collaborate on what can be done to reduce it and this type of thing. But you don't want to shoulder that by yourself.
That's right. No, you've heard this before, Carl, is that, you know, we often walk into a room with the prototype and we see all of the ways it's going to fail. Well, that in the engineers and managers and everybody else see all the great functions and they're ready to ship it. And we have to moderate that to some extent.
Yes.
You know, and it's going, have you thought of, or is this a risk, or what's known here? Here's the consequence of those risks. Here's the downside to these things. And here's ways to investigate it to solve this problem or to move forward to it. There's a bunch that goes with that. But I think there is a threshold. And it can come from financial, it can come from safety, it could come from market acceptance or whatever. And it's where we connect that risk to what's important to the rest of the organization. Just saying the sky is falling makes a good children's story. until the sky actually falls, I suppose.
Yeah, but it doesn't make for good reliability management.
That's right. You have to connect it and connect the logic going and say, hey, look, if this product is supposed to be used outdoors and it's going to see condensation and you're using dissimilar metals on this voltage path that we know is going to do galvanic corrosion, here's the science for that. Mm-hmm. This is going to cause a problem and it's going to fail. And here's the evidence, right? Or we need to get the evidence that this is either good or not good, or where's the condensation go? Or how does it keep dry and so on? And by raising those flags, and I've had people turn to look at me going, how do you know it's going to fail that way? And it says, well, let's try it. And we put some water on it. And in about 20 minutes later, it was shorted.
Right.
In that particular case, I'm using that specific example, but by having that deep knowledge as a reliability engineer, we add a lot of value to the organization by spotting areas of concern or issues or problems.
Yep, you're right. You're right, Fred. In the last episode, right at the end, you mentioned the difference between small companies, startups, and larger companies. And I think a lot of larger companies are really getting the message on the need to operate faster and faster, mm-hmm. and the need to be more entrepreneurial, even though they're in a larger company. And that can be done. That can be done by project breakdown and with the right teams. But I wanted to share with you a story. Recently, I was on site with a large company that was skeptical about FMEA. They hadn't been using a lot of FMEA work, mm-hmm. and they were skeptical because what they hear is it takes a long time. And so I said, okay, I'll teach FMEA, and I'll teach it how you do it as quickly as you can, but without violating the principles, and we'll do a project, and I'll show you. And so it was a challenge because I not only had to teach the principles, I knew I was teaching to people that were skeptical. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll show you how this, let's do it together. We'll walk the path together. And then when we're all done, you can decide what you think. Well, we chose a project after the fundamentals training was done. We picked a project and we did the pre-work on the FMEA really well. In other words, we prioritized which areas were most important, which had new technology, which had field histories, this type of thing. Mm-hmm. And we did a really good block diagram like we've been talking about, and we understood the interfaces, and we only brought into the FMEA the highest priority functions, highest priority interfaces, and we had a really good knowledge of where the prioritized field history was. And we conducted a workshop that lasted 2 days, and we got through a huge amount of this project. This very large project, and that not only included the system, but some of the lower level areas. Mm-hmm. And the results were outstanding. They were like convinced that this is the right thing to do when it's done that way. Mm-hmm. So it was just a fun project to demonstrate that you can be fast in a fast environment. And I don't mean that 2 days that it took that. A lot of that 2 days was part of the training of the preparation steps and teaching. So it's really 1 day of the actual project.
Right.
So fun to do.
Yeah. Now, and it's, there's like FMEA, there's a mastery of the tools that allows you to focus it, right, to the areas that make the most difference. Where I ran into problems with big companies is that they tend to be segmented. Oh, the reliability guys do that. Right. Or mm-hmm. the mechanical engineers take care of that and they don't. And we lose those interfaces unless there's some brilliant engineers or managers that recognize that that's where the problems occur. The other thing that I find in larger companies is that the field issues are insulated from the team. Right. They have customer service teams and they have field support teams and they have design, you know, the manufacturing and ops teams take care of it, or their supplier does all the repairs and they just summarize it into a pie chart what the results are. And it's not terribly useful. So that sometimes the size and the scale makes the communication across those teams and across those interfaces much, much more difficult than it really has to be.
I agree with you. I think the challenge for us And let's look at this from a reliability management point of view. And part of reliability management is getting a good reliability plan. And Fred, you and I have talked for years about the importance of gap analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge here is to do a good gap analysis. So if you're working with a large company, part of the gap is the organizational issues. If you have cross-silo problems and the field history is not well communicated to the design engineers and all of that, that becomes part of the gaps.
Yeah, I always look for those cross priorities, right? Mm-hmm. If the dominant priority is get the design done and the second team's priority is build it well, right? Which one of you guys are paying attention to that we actually get good supply chain reliability for components coming in? And then you look at what issues they're having, and they're all from suppliers. And like, well, you know, that's a gap, guys. We need to figure out where's that priority fit into this structure. You can focus your priority on specific things in order to manage your teams, yet you can't forget all the rest of this stuff. And I think that's where moving fast. One of the things that we're facing there, Carl, in small and large companies, I see it more in large companies, is that we have to focus, we have to prioritize, we have to be only do this one thing and do it really well, and we'll be good. And so what I've seen companies doing is they say, all right, we're going to focus on time to market. I had one manager when I asked her what's the priorities for making decisions in their group, and is it time to market, cost, or functions, or reliability. I added reliability and quality in it. And she went, oh, that's easy. Time to market, time to market, time to market. What were the other ones? And she was serious, okay. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Is their dominant drive was that if it doesn't affect time to market, don't worry about it. And unfortunately, you have to worry about it. It's still there.
It's there. This is the environment that you're working in. And I think as reliability professionals, we need to be aware of the environment we're working in, and our value add needs to be consistent with that environment. And I'm thinking of reliability planning here for mm-hmm. just a minute. Although we have a chapter on gap analysis, and it can take as long as it takes, depending on how you do it, it can also be fast. Because what you're describing there, Fred, you did a lot of, you were doing some gap analysis very quickly on the fly in that startup.
Oh, yeah.
And you can do the same thing in a larger company. It's a thinking process. You start with where you want to be, what's the vision, and then you start looking at what are the gaps to achieving that vision. And if you can start taking notes on those right away. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out process, but you want to prioritize the gaps. And that's kind of where I'm going to on this thought process here. Mm-hmm. One of the fun things about podcasting is we're not working off a script. We're just sort of building as we go.
We're certainly not.
I'm sort of building as I go here. You can prioritize gaps. You might have a list of 15 gaps, but some of them are really important, very critical. And your reliability plan has to be ingenious on how to overcome those gaps so that your reliability implementation can be consistent with a fast environment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the quickest way I know how to do that gap analysis is with the maturity matrix, and just hand it to a number of your thought leaders or your key people, engineers and managers on your team, and say, where do we sit on this matrix? Right. And one or two things might be doing really, really well that you actually think through that part of the reliability elements of it. And you might do testing really well. Right. But if you don't do good failure analysis, that'll show up there as being less mature or less developed as a capability. Mm-hmm. And then you go, all right. This one's holding us back, guys. We need to get these feedback mechanisms in place. And it provides a focus on how to improve the thought process across the organization. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not the reliability engineer's job to think about reliability exclusively for the organization. It's really to enable the rest of the organization to think about and balance the reliability issues with everything else they got going on. If it's a high stress, time to market type thing, One of the huge risks to an organization, one that program managers think about a lot, is, well, what if we discover something late in the program that delays our program 2 months, right? And traditional reliability of doing the last minute prototype testing is a classic way to discover, oh yeah, this thing explodes if you turn it on, which is not its expected function. But by understanding what's important to the organization, we can come back and say, all right, there's other tools and other ways for us to expose those risks and understand them earlier in the program. But we need to change X, Y, and Z to make that happen. And so if it's aligning with that organization's priorities and desired outcomes, but it's identifying what are the impediments to that? What are the blockages to that? What are the hindrances to that? And then what do we need to change to make more progress on the reliability front?
Yeah, very much so. The fast, and just a word of clarity, is does not mean that training is fast. It does not mean that your fundamentals that you learn are learned fast. In other words, you don't. It takes time to learn the fundamentals, and it takes time to be a good reliability engineer. So I'm not talking about the fast on that side of it. I'm saying if you really understand the fundamentals, and that's key, absolute key. You understand what failure analysis is. You understand what mechanisms of failure are. You understand what FMEA is. You understand the different tools. That needs to be done very thoroughly, and they need to be internalized. Then you can turn around and work with the company or inside your company to say, how can we do this in a manner that's consistent with the product development process and without shortcutting the results? In other words, you want to achieve high reliability, but you'd want to do it in a manner that's consistent with the product development process. But you need to know the fundamentals really well to do that, I think.
Well, I'm trying to remember the quote from one of your authors that you quote a number of times, Stephen Covey.
Stephen Covey, right. Begin with the end in mind?
No, I'm thinking of the one to sharpen your saw.
Sharpen your saw, right. Very good.
Right, it's because one of the things when I was working at Hewlett-Packard, one of the programs we had and I took over was we did a design for reliability training. It was a 2-day seminar that we did at various sites across the corporation. And we would, in one of the sites, and it had, I don't know, a dozen or more different divisions at that one site. There were a lot of people there, but we would do the training there every quarter. And I started, after doing it for a number of years, I recognized some of the engineers and managers would be in it every time we offered it, or would be there at least every 6 months or every year. And it's like, you were here last time, and I think the time before. And he goes, this is such good refresher. It keeps it fresh in my mind. It keeps me sharp. And I think that goes to that. You got to invest. Going fast does not mean skipping vacation. Alibaba, drawn a blank on his name, the CEO of that, or the he said, no, you have to work 9-9-6, 9 hours a day, 9 to 9, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day for 6 days a week. And if you don't want to do that, don't apply for work here. And I thought, that's not fast. That's brutal. And not taking time to go to a conference, or not taking time to study or to read or to take a class on these fundamentals is going to slow you down in the long run.
I think that's
fundamental.
I totally agree. I think the what I'm seeing here is almost a little matrix, but if you plot on one end your knowledge of fundamentals on the, say, the x-axis, and then the y-axis, you plot how good you are at applying those in a fast environment, that you're going to see that they are correlated.
Well, that's the maturity matrix, Carl.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If a team in an organization and their day-to-day thinking embody the fundamentals of reliability, they can pick and choose the right tools at the right time, versus a company that says, oh, halt's great, let's do halt on everything, and they have no idea what they're doing. Then they're wasting a bunch of time and resources, and they're not getting much value out of it. And that's just one example. But I think that what you're plotting is the maturity matrix, is how efficient you are correlate. And what I wish I would have done and thought of it 20 years ago is to say, you know, for the organizations that regularly attended these sharpening the saw sessions, for example, what was their warranty cost? Was there the ones too busy to go to training? Were they the ones struggling? I bet you they were.
I bet they were. I've shared this story before, but it comes to mind is when I was a manager of product reliability. I would have at our staff meetings, so that we'd meet once a week to staff, I would keep the administration to a bare minimum. And then I would add on sharing knowledge about failure mechanisms and different fundamentals with the group and different application of fundamentals, just trying to spend a little bit of time sharpening the saw using that forum of the weekly meeting and encourage people. And I still do to this day, like you said, attend conferences, get trained, keep working at it. The technology is changing and you need to refresh, even if you've been in the business for 30 years. When I go to a RAMS conference, I'm attending the sessions often to stay up to date. And I'm continually reading articles and applications. As I tell people in classes, I'm constantly learning about, even though I've been in reliability engineering management for 35 years, I think my learning curve is still pretty steep.
Yeah, I agree. So to summarize, you know, whether it's a small or large company, is understanding the basics and the fundamentals is key. It's then having that capability to say, this is the right set of tools that allows us to get the most bang for the buck, use that analogy, is that if we understand our risks, if we understand the limitations, if we understand what we don't know and how to a path towards uncovering what we don't know, you can move pretty quick. We're not saying go do 6 different accelerated life tests that each take 2 years to set up and implement. If that's what you have to do, because that's how you get sufficient information to answer your question, well, then you got to do that. It's the right tool at the right time. Now, the point that we didn't spend much time on, Carl, was, and I don't think we're going to have time today to do that, is, well, how do you do too little? I think that's obvious on the extreme, is you ignore it. And I call it the Microsoft method, where you build it and ship it and then see what happens. Let your customers do the evaluation. Some people can afford to do that. Some, that's just not a good idea. I think everybody understands that.
Yep. It's especially if there's any safety involved, but for sure. I'm seeing a summary of a couple of things from this conversation. One is the continuing use of the 80-20, the vital few.
Yep.
And it's saying the same thing you're saying, which is stay focused on the most vital tools and the best prioritization of those tools. And the second thing is not compromising safety. If you keep those two things in mind, then I think you can go a long ways to operating in a fast environment.
Yep. Yeah. And so I expect a lot of quick responses to and thoughts on how to do this. If you've got in, because I know that even if you're working in a fast environment and a tight constraints, that you still have time to think about reliability. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. So head over to AscendoReliability.com/go/SOR and let us know what's working, what's not working, or what areas are you having struggles with or trouble with. And we'd love to use those as input for future episodes. And I think we'd have some thoughts on that, but we are, like Carl and I both said, is we're both still learning. So we'd like to get some insights from you. So with that, Carl, let's see what we get in the mailbox from this request, because I think there's going to be some interesting insights here.
I think so. Great conversation, Fred. Really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.